The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Fundman. We've got an awesome show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we'll be featuring, this is not the first time, Rabbi Dr. Abram Twersky has written a new book, The Rabbi and the Nuns, the inside story of a rabbi's therapeutic work with the Sisters of St. Francis Hospital in Pittsburgh. Quite a dichotomy, but This is going to be good stuff, I guarantee it. The portion of the week is the portion of Vayechi. It's chapter 47 and further in the book of Genesis. We will be finishing the book of Genesis this week in the synagogue, for those who are caring. We got a wonderful assortment of music, a dynamite Hasidic story at the end, hopefully if we have time. And before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Five men were arrested on suspicion of throwing stones at a car driven outside Jerusalem in which a two-year-old was seriously injured. The four Arab teenagers originally arrested the day after the attack were released. One of the five terrorists arrested is the son of a local Hamas leader. An Arab family from East Jerusalem was attacked while driving along the same road where the two-year-old was injured, but the attackers left them alone once the young woman in the car yelled in Arabic that they were Palestinians. Hezbollah blamed Israel for the assassination of Hassan Hawlo al-Lakis at his house in Beirut. Israel, of course, dismissed the claims. Israel Deputy Defense Minister Danny Danon warned Hezbollah against attacking Israel that serious repercussions would ensue. The Syrian war continues to spill over into Israel. IDF forces on the Golan Heights near the Syrian border were shot at from a Syrian army outpost. The IDF returned fire and identified a direct hit on a Syrian soldier. That's a very sterile way of saying that they killed a soldier. But anyway, no Israeli soldiers were injured. A UN resolution to provide agricultural aid to developing nations was brought forward by Israel. What's so special about this is the resolution received 130 nation co-sponsors, a record number for Israeli resolution. This act is seen as a weakening of the Arab-led alliance against Israel at the UN, mostly because developing nations like to have money put into their countries to develop agriculture. Israel revealed, listen to this one scared the whatever's out of me. Israel revealed the top threats to Israel computer users, and it's probably not limited to just to Israel, for the month of November. The viruses were spread primarily on Facebook and YouTube. The top threat was the JSFBook virus, a Trojan horse virus spread via links on popular sites that lead to websites that spread the virus. Once it is on a user's computer, it tracks the person's internet use and collects passwords and other sensitive information. And so watch what you click on when you click it, and keep your virus checker up to date. Some good news, the Rabbinical Center of Europe launched a project to build 30 new ritual baths throughout Europe. The project's cost is estimated at about 2 million euros. Last year, the RCE built 20 mikvahs around Europe. The goal of the project is that every Jew should live near a ritual mikvah. Go RCE! Tourism in Bethlehem is expected to reach a record $2 million in 2013, double the $1 million who came in 2012. 75,000 tourists are expected to be in Jerusalem, Nazareth, and Bethlehem over the December 25th weekend. After experiencing the driest fall in 70 years, it started raining in Israel on Wednesday and continued through the weekend. Israel's rainy season runs from October to March. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herr Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Tursky, who has just written another book called The Rabbi and the Nuns, The Inside Story of Rabbi's Therapeutic Work with the Sisters of St. Francis. How are you today, Dr. Tursky?
Thank God, fine.
Good to hear. What number book is this? Have you lost track?
I think it's 70 or 69 or 70.
Something's Kane Ahura. I was going to say for the last, how many books do you think you got in you still?
How many books what?
How many books do you still think you have in you yet?
Well, I think that Isaac Asimov had 200, I'd like to go to 100 if I could.
Get hit 100. Okay, good. My wife pointed out that Herman Wouk just recently released a book, and he's 94. So you've got lots of precedent to keep you there. Okay, back with the Rabbi and the Nun. First of all, my wife thinks this is the best book that you've ever written, and she's waiting for the movie. So not that we go to movies, except, you know,
right.
No, we don't do that. But anyway, she's still waiting. I think maybe she might make an exception. But then she wanted to know who you would want to have star as Rabbi Dr. Abraham Tursky in the lead role. So I don't, we can go there later. What's your impetus, Dr. Tursky, in writing a book about Franciscan nuns?
Well, I've been toying with the...
Hello? I'm sorry.
It was an interesting experience in itself, being a Hasidic rabbi and working closely not only with the nuns in the hospital, but also having become the consultant to the Catholic diocese and developed a close relationship with the bishop who became cardinal. Oh, it was just a fascinating experience. And along the way, there were so many interesting things that happened. I mean, out of that relationship grew the Gateway Rehabilitation Center, one of the largest rehabilitation centers for alcohol and drugs in the country. With many outpatient facilities, you know, a staff that every day of the week sees about 1,500 clients a day. And then there were many interesting cases that could have happened anywhere, but that's where they happened. So I thought it's a shame not to write it down.
Interesting. Let's back up. 1959. You were a pulpit rabbi, as your title is, Rabbi Doctor. You were a pulpit rabbi, and I'm assuming that you're probably doing a pretty good job being a rabbi, and people would come to you as people come to me, and they have problems that require solemnic wisdom to somehow fall into to the brain of the rabbi, because people expect it since you're a rabbi. And in my case, I learned all about bovine anatomy, until this day, don't know what a lung looks like, even though I was tested thoroughly on all the pathology of a lung. But people expect that because I know about what a cow lung looks like, that therefore I can be able to help them. But so 1959, you're a very successful rabbi. What made you decide to go into psychiatry, Dr. Tursky?
Well, what happened was I grew up under the tutelage of my father, who was a Hasidic rabbi. And my father was an intuitive therapist, very brilliant, very charismatic, very sensitive. And people came to him from all segments of Judaism, and even non-Jews came to him. And the court would send them cases to settle. And I watched that as I grew up, and I wanted to model myself after that. But when I became a rabbi in 1951, this was post-World War II. And what happened at that point was that psychiatry and psychology took off and had a meteoric rise. And it became evident to me that I'm not going to be able to do what my father did because people are not going to come to the rabbi the way they did to him. They're going to go to the professional psychiatrist and psychologist. And so what am I going to be doing as a rabbi? Well, at that point, pastoral counseling was not born yet. Adult education, at least in Milwaukee, was not, people were not too interested. All I was going to be doing is I'm going to be doing rituals. I'm going to be performing weddings and unveilings and funerals and bar mitzvahs. That's not what I wanted. And I figured, look, I wanted to do what my father did, but now the psychiatrist is the one who's going to do that, so I'll become a psychiatrist to do what I have to do as a rabbi. So that's what happened.
It's interesting that the title rabbi still comes before doctor.
Yes.
Indeed. Okay, so now I read your book, and it's actually fascinating. There's lots of little vignettes. There's 40 or so stories, 40, so close to 50 other stories. And what I'm seeing, and what I've always thought about psychiatry and therapy, is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, maybe expound on this, but a lot of dealing with people's foibles, as we'll call them, is just basically psyching them out. Is that true, Dr. Tursky?
I never felt it that way. That much I inherited from my father. That when someone came to him, he identified with the person. My father used to talk about his great great uncle, the Rebbe of Talna, and it was an interesting story that the Rebbe was receiving his chassidim all day, and the Rebbe's gabbai noticed that his clothes were soaked with perspiration. And he said, why are you sweating? You're not doing any exertion. He says, I am not doing any exertion. He says, when someone comes to me with a problem, in order for me to be able to help that person, I have to identify with him. So I have to take off my clothes and put on his clothes. So then I identify with him, but then I can't help him any more than he can help himself. I have to become objective. So I have to take off his clothes and put on my clothes again. He says, I've been sitting here taking off my clothes and putting off my clothes, taking off my clothes. He says, you see, I've not been exerting myself. That's the influence that I had, that when anyone came, that I tried to identify with the person's problem. And the other thing that I had inherited from my father, somebody would say in Yiddish, oh, yeah, there's a schlechte Jew. He is a bad Jew. And my father would say, there is no such thing. He is a foolish Jew, but he's not bad. He doesn't understand that what he's doing is wrong. So I've inherited the idea there's an inherent good in everyone. So you put those kinds of things together, and that's how I related to people. And that's, I guess, what happened when I related to non-Jews and to the Catholic Church. I guess that's what happened.
Explain that with the relationship then with the Catholic Church.
I'm sorry?
Explain that then, your relationship with the Catholic Church. Then.
Well, it was interesting because, as I pointed out in the book, in 1965, this was shortly after Vatican II had made some significant changes in the church, and the bishop called me and said that these changes are affecting some of the convents and some of the sisters are having difficulty adjusting. But he said, I can't send them to the average psychiatrist because they're going to attack their religion. But I will trust you. And I pointed out to the bishop, you know, you and I both know what the history of Jews in the church was. And all the kinds of service that we had from the church, and now you're turning to a Jew for help.
And the irony of it.
The bishop said, "Well, you know, even at the worst times, the Pope always had a Jewish doctor.
Uh-huh.
So I said to the cardinal, yeah, and when you become pope and you'll need a Jewish doctor, you'll have a psychiatrist, right? So what are people going to say about that? The pope has a psychiatrist for a doctor.
Uh-huh.
Right. But we had a mutual trust, and out of that, a lot of their religious, the nuns and the priests, a lot of them got some help because they would not have gotten elsewhere.
I find it actually quite fascinating that you kind of like stuck with the parameters of in dealing with Catholic clergy and not going in being antagonistic to their beliefs. Like, for example, if a person would a young woman came to you with doubts of whether she should become a nun or not, she didn't know if she wanted to be take a vow of celibacy and take a vow of obedience, and yet you didn't discourage her. How is it that, I mean, to me, being celibate is just like sort of like anathema to like humanity. Yet, how did you keep your humanity separate from, I suppose, your mission here?
Well, you know, that's interesting. You asked the question. I never saw that as an issue. The case that you mentioned, here's a young woman who wants to make a life decision. And it was my job to decide, is this being made because of any emotional problems, and that she wants to use this religious vocation as an escape from her problems, which is not good, or is this sincere? And so we will spend some time discussing that. There were some that I encouraged to join the convent, and others that I didn't. And, I talked with the bishop, and I said, you know, you realize that I maybe discourage some people from staying in the convent if they are doing so for emotional rather than sincerely religious reasons. And so he said, you know, we don't need neurotics in the convent. So he appreciated.
Okay, if a person's really crazy and really does need a psychiatrist, then he doesn't need to be be a clergy person, I guess, is the deal. There's a large part of the book which talks about hypnosis, a hypnotherapy rather than hypnosis. Hypnosis is something that people do on stages and they get people to act like chickens. That's not what we're talking about over here. It's like hypnotherapy. So it seemed very surprising to me. That clergy per se specifically would allow themselves to submit to hypnotherapy, because when you're under hypnosis, you're under the will of someone else. So tell us about the relationship with hypnotherapy and how you used it over the years.
That's a common misconception. Yeah, you are under the influence of someone else, but you don't lose your own control at all. For example, if you hypnotize someone and you tell him to do something which is against his principles, right, he won't do it. He'll just wake up out of the trance. So, hypnotherapy as it's used medically and psychiatrically is much different than the stuff that they do on the stage. So it's a totally different relationship. And I started it off very early in my career. I started off because I had a patient who just could not overcome her anxiety with all the treatment in the world. And so I asked her to consider hypnosis, and she said, I'll consider anything. And I said, well, you have to wait. I want you to think this over for a week. I needed a week's time to find out how to hypnotize.
That would help if you knew how to hypnotize somebody before you went to the hypnotherapy,
right,
I guess,
so,
yes.
And she had a good result, and then I began using hypnosis, and I've had some really startling cases that I published. But that was many years ago, and then I became interested in alcoholism and drug addiction, and it so happens that in these conditions, hypnosis is of very little value, so I haven't used it much since. But it is in good hands and a competent person, it can be a very helpful adjunct to therapy.
That's interesting you say that that hypnosis doesn't affect addiction. I have a very close friend who went to hypnotherapy for anxiety. And after one time, this person was smoked like a fiend. And I saw it. I said to him, "You're not smoking." And he kind of like sort of like did a double take and then thought and said, "I wonder if my hypnotherapist mentioned anything to it, because I really have no desire to smoke." And then went back the next time and said, "Did you mention anything about smoking?" And the hypnotherapist said, "Yeah, I happened to mention that smoking is bad and you really should try to cut it out." So here it is, this person who is so receptive to hypnotic suggestion to even stop an addictive compulsive behavior such as smoking, Dr. Tursky.
Well, I have a story to match that, which ended up a little bit different, with a doctor who was treating this woman for her anxiety, and he noticed that her fingers were stained from cigarettes, and so he told her, made the suggestion, that cigarettes would taste terrible.
Okay.
She came back the next visit, and she said, "Did you tell me anything about cigarettes?" He said, "Yes." Well, she says, "I figured out that's what it was, because ever since then, I've tried 6 different brands, and they all taste terrible." And he says, "Well, are you still smoking?" "Oh, 2 packs a day."
Yeah, because they taste terrible now.
He says, "How do they taste?" He says, "Terrible, but it's a habit."
Right, indeed. So he didn't tell her to stop. He just told her they taste terrible. There was always a joke when I was growing up. There was a very large complex around the area where I grew up in Newark that was a convent, a monastery, and it had an orphanage, and there was a school that started from like nursery all the way through high school. It was all in this one huge complex. And I used to hear my mother used to always joke about the priests were the ones who were giving like the wine, and they for every one taste of wine that they were giving, they were taking 2. So have your specialty had become alcoholism and drug addiction? Are you finding that there was a problem with alcoholism in the clergy, Dr. Tursky?
Yeah, priests and sisters are human beings. And if they have the gene and the vulnerability to become alcoholic or addicts, they do. And I have the story in the book about the Pope's mitzvah.
Yes, please tell that story.
Right. So there was a case of a young priest who was a very severe alcoholic.
What year was that, Dr. Tursky, approximately?
That was probably around 73 or 74.
Okay.
So it's not unusual that priests and sisters are vulnerable to the same problems that everybody else is vulnerable to.
Okay, so your advice to the priest was to, instead of having wine...
Well, yes, what I told him was to drink grape juice, and he said they're not allowed to do that. It has to be wine.
Yeah, because we make Kiddush Friday night, and a person who can't do wine is allowed to use grape juice, so it seems like normal.
They didn't have that provision in the church. So I called my friend the cardinal in Rome and asked him to get a dispensation for the Catholic priest, for the alcoholic priest, which he did. You know. So that was my contribution to the Catholic Church.
And monumental, I would say. You know, do you think that the cardinal actually conveyed the message back to the Pope that he did a mitzvah?
I'm sorry?
You told the cardinal
Pope. Cardinal, yeah, I told the Pope that he had a mitzvah.
Do you think he conveyed it to Pope Paul VI that he did a mitzvah?
Well, I don't know.
That would be cute. If you're just joining us, we are having more fun than we should be with Rabbi Dr. Abraham Tursky, who has just written a book called The Rabbi and the Nuns, the inside story of a rabbi's therapeutic work with the Sisters of St. Francis. You're at the head of psychiatry at St. Francis Hospital in Pittsburgh, which is a major psychiatric center serving Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. And after 20 years, you went and did something else. Did you find St. Francis had come to its an end at that point, Dr. Tursky?
No, St. Francis, I left St. Francis to go full-time with Gateway, which was the child of St. Francis, and I left St. Francis to be full-time at Gateway. But things have changed and evolved in Pittsburgh so that St. Francis Hospital is no longer existing. It was now taken over by the University of Pittsburgh.
So it's just like a natural progression that you moved on. And at Gateway, which is primarily, which is an addiction center, your whole world basically became dealing with addicts, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Could you tell us, it's in the time that we have left, tell us about the 12 steps. And it was invented by a Catholic priest. And
the 12 steps, to me, are amazing. I wrote a book called Self-Improvement, I'm Jewish, in which I pointed out that if I had to write a program for recovery based on Torah and Musar, it would be word for word the 12 steps. But it is so Jewish that I cannot understand how Bill Wilson, who was not Jewish, how he ever got access to these ideas. They are taken right out of Musar. A wonderful program. It's not only a question of stopping alcohol or drugs. It's a question of transforming oneself into a different kind of person, character refinement. And that can be applicable not only for alcohol, for drugs, for gambling, for food, for sex, for anything. It's a program for character refinement, and it's sometimes I wish that I've even told some people, look, I haven't been able to help you psychiatrically. Go out and become an alcoholic, and then you'll be able to join the 12-step program.
Yeah. Facetiously. But you do tell the story of a woman who was plagued with guilt that you said, go 12 steps, and one of the 12 steps is let go, let God.
Right. And she was not alcoholic. Right, but she went to the program. I have a situation of a young man who was asthmatic, whose life was horrible. He, 4 times a day, he had to go on a respiratory machine. He was taking close to 30 pills a day, and he went to alcohol. Never was an alcoholic or a drug addict, right? And he said, "Look, I'm off of the respiratory machine, and I only take 7 pills a day." So, the program can help many people in many ways.
So it seems then that, can we talk the difference between, say, like psychosomatic illness versus maybe a faith-type cure-type deal? Is this sort of like the adage is a mind is a terrible thing to waste and let your mind do your curing, Dr. Torsky?
Well, there's no question that we now know that the emotions and the mind-body is really not a dual structure. The human being is one unit. But certainly many diseases are the result of emotional disturbances. There's good reason to believe that there's an emotional cause for cancer. The new research is constantly strengthening the ideas of what the effect of the mind is.
Indeed. Well, that's basically going to wrap us up. I could talk for a whole hour just devoted to this book and all the ins and outs. Again, our guest has been Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky. The book is The Rabbi and the Nuns, the inside story of the rabbi's therapeutic work with the Sisters of St. Francis. It is published by Mekor Press, available online and wherever fine Jewish books are sold. And we want to wish you success with this book. And we reserve the right, Dr. Twersky, to call you back when number 70 was. Okay, take care. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Shul Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Interesting juxtaposition, MDS Drug Detox. When we had Dr. Aronoff on the show, said that she, as an anesthesial therapist, could treat heroin addiction but couldn't deal with alcohol addiction. And here we have Dr. Twersky, who deals with alcohol addiction but probably really couldn't do a whole lot with heroin addiction, being a psychiatrist. Okay, let's now move on. This would now normally be a place where we would offer a public service announcement, but no one sent me any this week. So if your organization is having a thing, send me an announcement about that offering, and we will present it as a public service announcement free of charge here. Send information to www.rabbifinman.com. What do you got for us now? This is Eighth Day, Amosai Kasimar. When is the Messiah going to come?
Whose dream are we dreaming? Whatever the show, we wanna know how to inspire to take us all higher. So we tell them that Helikim al Shem. So we tell them there's only one in heaven. So we tell them you have a holy heart. So we tell them He knew it from the start.
Wherever we go, we wanna know who the words are we preaching, the story we're teaching, whatever the show, we wanna know how to inspire with holy desire. Wherever we go, we wanna know whose hopes are we reaching, whose dream are we dreaming, whatever the show, we wanna know how to inspire to take us all higher. So we tell them, that Helikim al Shem. So we tell them, there's only one in heaven. So we tell them, you have a holy heart. So we tell them, He knew it from the start. So we tell them, Rebbe Yisroel Baal Shem. So we tell them, there's only one in heaven. So we tell them, you have a holy heart. So we tell them, He knew it from the start.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher?
Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's a symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mycosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mycosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Fibbin here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. There's a new product put out by that's under the supervision of Michigan Kosher Supervisors. It's called J.K. Scrumpy. It is a hard cider, and it's got a real nice kick to it. If you're alcoholic, sorry, stay far away. It's available. It's organic, and I happen to see a bottle of it available at the Whole Foods downtown and also in Western Market. It's around. It's in liquor stores. It's just getting around. It's a pretty new product. It's only been out for a year, and it's only been under supervision since this year. So go give yourself a try, some J.K. Scrumpy hard cider. Anyway, this is now David Krakauer, who is a klezmer extraordinaire, and he's playing now here a song. It's an instrumental called Der Alte Klezmer, which means the old musician.
Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Fibbin, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We got time for one more instrumental piece. This is Eitan Katz. The piece is called Nigun, which just simply means a Hasidic melody. So let's listen in.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulfeman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week, we will be reading in the synagogue with the help of the Almighty the portion of Vayechi. It begins in the book of Genesis, chapter 47, end of chapter 47 and following. And, yes, deals with the end of the life of Jacob. There are interesting things that are focused in this portion. One of them is actually chapter 49, which is the blessings that Jacob gave to each of his children before he passed away. Now, if it would have been that the blessing would have been specific for that son, we wouldn't know it about it, because if it would only relevant to that son, let's say the blessing that he gave to Reuben would only been relevant to Reuben, but it's not relevant to me, so I wouldn't need to know about it, and it would therefore not be in the Bible. But since it is in the Bible, That tells me that the blessing given to all of these various sons, to all the 12 sons of Jacob, are indeed relevant to me. Now, it would take me an hour, probably take me more than an hour, to discuss the relevance of each of the 12 blessings. But we're going to do one. And which one are we going to do? We're going to do the first one. Okay? The first one was to the brother Reuben, the firstborn. So he gets all the brothers there. So he says, Reuben, you are my firstborn, my power and the beginning of my might. More power and more might you have. Okay? So this is the first part that he talks about. There's another blessing, another verse I'm not going to talk about. That would take another half hour. Is that a blessing? And the answer is, yeah. But these are called the blessings to Jacob. More power and more might. Historically, we would say that the Reubenites, the children of Reuben, were very big. They were very strong. They were the infantry people. And it's described in the various commentaries that at war, you would definitely like to have a Reubenite on your side. They would probably be like the Army Rangers or the Navy SEALs, the guys in the Black Hawk copters that are hitting the beach first. It says that a Reubenite could chop off a man's head and shoulder with one swoop. This is a strong guy. Not sorry for my graphicness so early in the morning. I hope that didn't ruin your bagel this morning, as I see you're cutting up the onions with a knife. But that's not what he's talking about. It says in the Ethics of Our Fathers, who is truly a strong person? A strong person is not someone that would beat you at arm wrestling. A strong person is a person who can control himself. We talk about addictions, and we talk about various other type of ailments and malaises that Dr. Tversky showed people they had the strength to handle themselves. And generally, not that I say there's anything wrong with going to psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists. If you need a doctor, you need a doctor. But if you have a splinter, you don't need to go to the emergency ward. If there's something that you can handle, then handle it. And very often, a person may be presented with a situation that they have to realize that they are the kayach and the strength and the power and have more power and more might, because this is the blessing that is given to the Jewish people. This is a blessing which says you have the strength and the ability to be able to deal with the situation as it comes up. I wanted to talk to Dr. Tversky about depression, because he talks about depression, he talked about guilt, he talked about humility, as all the various different human emotions. He talked a little bit about anger. When a person is depressed, the underlying thing of it used to be, they've really argued about what is depression. It used to be that anger was turned towards another, and depression is the anger turned towards self. They don't believe that anymore, thank God, because that's wrong. Depression is caused by an inability to cope, for the most part, and whatever it is that the person is that they can't cope. It's true that sometimes a person might need a little help. That's why we have pharmacognosy. But for the most part, the Almighty gives us the strength to cope with whatever situation we have. We just have to allow ourselves to do it. The expression of submitting ourselves to a higher power, letting go, let God, all these, going through the 12 steps indeed. And realizing that God's got your back. And not only has God got your back, he's got your front, your side, your top, your bottom too. And is helping us along. because God was the one who put us here. And through divine providence, God put us in the situations where we find ourselves. And God's not going to be so cruel as to say, I'm putting you in this situation, and by the way, you can't cope. We can cope. And that's what we have to do. Speaking of coping, we have to take a quick commercial break. You'll be more than able to cope with this one. And we'll be right back. We got the Hasidic story coming up next. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Harry Schulfinman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com, www.rabbifinman, RabbiFinman.com. What will you find there? Well, right on the homepage, you can contact me. Ask me a query or question. I love fan mail, and I will respond in kind. If you missed a bit of the show this week, no worries. Go to RabbiFinman.com, click on the radio page, radio pro show page, and there you'll have archived editions of the show going back a little over a month. We have archived editions of the U Parsha, the Hasidic U story, the E Parsha, which are all insights and hopefully an entertaining and educational way into the portion of the week, the holidays, Hasidic stories. They're all there. And, of course, the very, very important donations page. Today is December the 8th, I believe. And we paid November today, Baruch Hashem. So we're only 1 month behind. We need your support. The Jewish Hour has been on air 18 years. We do have supporters. We do have commercials. But the brunt of the show is listeners just like you. $10, $25. It's amazing. You know, if it would be, I say, people, if everybody in the show would give a dollar that's listening, I would have absolutely no problems. I could actually give up my day job. So don't think that your dollar's not going to help. And I've gotten dollar donations, and I'm very happy and fine with it, because every dollar that you send means there's one less dollar that I have to go looking for to try and raise. So help us out over here. You're listening to the show. You're enjoying it. We need your help. Do it today. It's the month of December. Uncle Sam is going to be wanting to know, have you been good or bad? And is going to want to know, and you got till December 31st to get all those charitable donations in. Jewish Hour is part of a 501(c) corporation, so Uncle Sam will be happy. You'll be happy. All the rest of the listeners out there in radio and internet land will be happy. The Almighty will be happy because you're giving charity. You'll be blessed. Who knows? What else might happen? You might just achieve financial independence by just giving a donation to The Jewish Hour. No guarantees, but I wouldn't be surprised. We got, speaking of giving, the mayor of Przemyślam. Przemyślam is a small city located in central Poland. And mayor of Przemyślam was a Rebbe who lived, it was popular in the, from like the 30s to the 60s of the 1800s. As a young boy, his father was also a prominent rabbi. He kind of realized that his mission in life was to help people. And he started what was called a gemach. A gemach is a free loan fund. We call it now like a micro bank. They have these things now all over in developing countries where you can go and you can borrow $50 for like a week to go buy merchandise so that you can sell it and pay the guy back. And that's basically what he was doing. He was a 10-year-old, and he would go around collecting. And so a market day, that the market days were very specific times during the week. There was Monday, because everybody had eaten everything in the house over the weekend, and Thursday, because everybody's preparing to eat everything in the house over the weekend. So Mondays and Thursdays, this 10-year-old would wander around the market, and he would ask people for basically the Polish equivalent of a half a buck. So he happened to ask one butcher, can you give me a half a buck? And the butcher jokingly said to him, I'll give you a whole dollar if you could tell me if this cow is kosher or not. He said it jokingly. Now, to know if a cow is kosher, it has to be slaughtered properly. And then the insides have to be examined. We talk about, I mentioned before, about bovine pathology, which I happen to be an expert in, even though I have never seen a cow lung. But they check out the various parts of the body to see if this animal is indeed healthy. And if there's any, the slightest, littlest thing wrong with it, the animal is declared unkosher. In the shtetl, in Europe, that meant that the butcher who bought the cow from the cow dealer lost a lot of money because he couldn't sell it as kosher. He had to now give it up as like a factory second to the non-Jews who don't have to eat kosher meat. So he went and he asked this guy, I'll give you a buck if you tell me it's kosher. He said, sure, no problem. That cow happens to be perfectly kosher. Gave him the dollar, took the cow. The cow was perfectly kosher. The next week, the butcher goes looking for the kid and says, I'll give you a dollar for every cow that you tell me is 100% kosher. So he told him that one is kosher and this one is kosher and that one's kosher. So what happened is that this butcher suddenly had a market on all the kosher cows. The other butchers are like screaming, what's going on over here? He's bribing the sheikh, the slaughterer, to make all of his cows kosher. And they took it to the rabbi. And the rabbi, the butchers told him, I just give the kid a buck and he tells me if it's kosher. So they did the same thing. Word got back to the kid's father. And the kid was severely chastised by his father. And he told them, listen, there are things that people know that other people just don't need to know. And he said, better not to tell such things. So if you know, you don't necessarily need to tell. That's the story. That's the show. Somebody requested that, said, you know, you never play Rachim. It's one of the most popular shows that there is in the whole entire is Jewish music. So I'm playing Rachim now for you. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you again next week. Bye. Yo, in Mishkan, the boy, the whole. The young Malkus, they started Mishkan.